Hello! It is January 11th, 2016. You're looking live at Phoenix, Arizona. This is episode 542 of the Will Leach Experience of Sports on Earth. I am Will Leach, and I think you're spending part of your day with me. I am out here in Arizona, here for the college football playoff. It's exciting times. It's Alabama. It's Clemson. Who's next? No one is next, because we will know a title winner soon. And I talked about Matt Brown. I didn't talk about Matt Brown. I talked to Matt Brown. So Matt Brown talked to me about college football. You should follow Matt Brown at Matt Brown CFB. But mostly, enjoy me and Matt Brown talking college football from Arizona, which is where I am. And Happy New Year. I'll be back with Allison Futter very soon. But for now, you know, enjoy Matt Brown. Happy New Year. All right, Matt, hello. We are in your hotel room right now. I have to say, I did not know that you would greet me in a towel. But nevertheless, I'm glad to have you. We are at the fancy, what is it? This is the JW Marriott in Scottsdale.
The JW Marriott Camelback Inn at Scottsdale, and it is gorgeous.
It is shockingly,
I've never been to Arizona, and this is great.
It is shockingly fancy. I've been here for the Super Bowl, and of course, I've gone out for Arizona Cardinals games in the past. And they do not set you up like this at the Super Bowl. This is clearly a college football playoff having more money than ESPN will soon be having to make up for having paid them because of the ratings last week. Spending money like crazy. It feels like you are in a little commune of college football media.
Yes, it's very strange. It's just all spread out. I had to, you know, Will had trouble finding my hotel room because it is very, very spread out and
It's
complicated, but it's gorgeous and great, and it's been set up very well despite the other travesties with the college football playoff this year.
Yeah, I want to talk to you. We'll talk a little about the game. I haven't talked to you yet about the New Year's Eve games. I talked to Spencer Hall about this. He is convinced that they are going to change the New Year's Eve thing for next year. He's like, there's no way ESPN is losing too much money off this. They're putting a brave face on it, but there's too much money being lost, not for them to change next year. I think he's wrong. I think that this thing this is what happens when you let the people that ran the BCS run the college football playoff. You have this New Year's Eve disaster, which they're spinning. They're spinning the New Year's Eve disaster as like, oh no, of course it was going to be down. I'm sure it'll be up a little bit next year because the games will be a little bit better. We'll be a little bit more used to it.
And they're on Saturday next
year. Yeah, but so it's a little easier, but that doesn't change the fact that like, this is going to be a problem again the year after that and then the year after that. What did you think of how all that went down, regardless of just the games, but the reaction to it and the way they've kind of handled it?
I admit, I was a little wrong. I thought people were overreacting to how bad it would be, but it was, I mean, of course, the way the games played out and the blowouts contributed to it and all that, but yeah, it was a disaster, and they're very arrogant about how they're going to take over the holiday and all that. And it's all...
It's not happening.
Mostly is the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl's fault.
Yeah.
The Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl.
It's more the Sugar Bowl. I feel like it's more the Sugar Bowl. Because the Rose Bowl, like, the tournament Rose of Prey is a big deal.
Yes.
Like, that's a big deal. That's an established thing. They were never going to move that. So to me, this seems the logical result is 1 o'clock, first game.
Yeah.
Rose Bowl, say 8 o'clock. But so that makes the Sugar Bowl the problem.
Right. And yeah, the Sugar Bowl was... You know, yes, it's historically a New Year's thing, but before the playoff was locked in, the SEC and the Big 12 wanted a Rose Bowl-like event.
Hey, yeah.
We're going to this game every year, and they locked it in with ESPN. They locked in 8:30 on New Year's Day and basically screwed the whole playoff up because 2 out of 3 years is going to be on New Year's Eve. And last year when the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl hosted the semifinals, it was brilliant. It worked perfectly. Everybody loved it. And I just, this morning, Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, had an availability with the media. And somebody asked him about that, and he's, like, giving the very political answer, obviously, because that's his job, but saying, you know, he was asked about the importance of the Sugar Bowl and the playoff, and he's trying to, like, say that they're equal, and it depends how you view it. And Oklahoma State and Ole Miss fans thought the Sugar Bowl was important.
Yes.
And it was just total nonsense, and everybody knows the playoff is more important, and the Sugar Bowl, there's no reason the Sugar Bowl can't be played on New Year's Eve. There's no reason the Sugar Bowl
they'll
can't
move
be played
it when it's convenient
on January 2nd.
Yeah, they happily
next
move
next year it will be on January 2nd.
Exactly, when it's a big deal.
January right. And when January 1st is a Sunday.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's we heard for however many years in the BCS how the playoff would ruin college football. And then they flip a switch and they have a playoff and they're like, oh, well, this is the best thing ever. Now an 8-team playoff would ruin college football, but in 10 years they'll be saying, oh, this is the best thing ever. Of course it's 8 teams.
Is there a way, and then we'll get into the actual game, is there a way, because to me the logical thing has always been, eight teams, first four games played on college campuses. Like, do that. Or if you have to, you move it into, you make every bowl happy and everybody plays an inning. But to me, it feels like eight teams just solves almost every problem.
It solves the on-field problems. It solves a lot of problems. It would be, there are issues logistically because they're not going to get rid of the conference championship games and move right. them. Right. And ideally, you know, the best weekend for the playoff would be for an eight team. And I agree that on campus would be best for the first round. The best weekend would probably be that first weekend of December. Yeah. And there are some justified concerns if you're saying we want to hold on campus games in the middle of December when there are actually finals week if they do want to pretend to be going to school.
Yeah, right.
And there are like graduation weekends.
Right. And it's not like they don't play a lot of basketball games those weeks. So, like, you're right. You're right.
It's hard for a town like State College, PA, or Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or Clemson, South Carolina, or just any of these, you know, little towns to transform into playoff venues on like graduation weekend in December. There are logistical challenges, but if they want an 18 playoff, which they're going to want to, they're going to figure it out.
They'll
probably get it wrong for 20 years, just like they're getting it wrong with New Year's Eve now.
Yeah.
But by 2050, we'll have a playoff that works if football still exists.
Yeah, I was going to say, if football is still around, if colleges still exist, if we are not run, if the country has not been taken over by ISIS by then, it'll be fun. All right, so the actual game, so the games themselves, it's funny, they were generally considered dull, but like, that Clemson-Oklahoma game was pretty exciting for the first half.
Yeah.
And even like if Michigan State scores that touchdown at the end of the second quarter, that game feels entirely different.
Right.
But once they don't, then Alabama does the, as Spencer Hall famously put it, picks you up and lets you kick your legs until you die. That is what Alabama does. My fear about this game, I think it's everybody's fear about this game, that's going to happen again. The one thing that people don't want, the perfect way to end this year of lousy bowls and blowouts. It's fun. And other than the TCU Oregon game, which even that was like just two blowouts stacked next to one another. The fear everybody has is this is going to end with an Alabama Clemson Alabama. You know, it's going to be close for the first two quarters, and then Alabama's going to do what they do. Do you see that happening, or is Clemson? People always say the type of team that beats Alabama is, of course, the team that moves quickly, that high on pace and has a mobile quarterback. They have a mobile quarterback. They're not that faster, a little faster, but they're not Oregon fast or Baylor fast. Are they the right team to give them a game or not?
I think they are. I think for all the justified talk that Alabama is the toughest matchup that Clemson has faced, which it is, their defense is one of the best I've ever seen. Their defensive front is one of the best ever. Clemson's the best matchup or the worst matchup that Alabama's had this year. I mean, they faced some good offenses, but the SEC, there were not many good quarterbacks in the SEC. Yeah. Dak Prescott, Mississippi State, who Alabama handled, but his supporting cast wasn't as strong. Brandon Allen in Arkansas, but different kind of team. They're more conventional. Joshua Dobbs in Tennessee. But nobody's like Deshaun Watson, who is the best quarterback in the country. Wayne Gallman's one of the best running backs Alabama has faced. Their offensive line, it's five new starters this year. They played really, really well, though. They took over the game against Oklahoma. Their receiving core is a little bit not as deep as they hoped because Deion Kane, their best deep threat, is out. And Mike Williams, their best receiver, was hurt in week one, has missed the whole year. So, you know, Clemson's not perfect on offense, but it's still the most complete team. They can attack you in a variety of ways. Watson can run. He can improvise. And, you know, a thing that's bothered Alabama in the past is when quarterbacks improvise, when they go off script, when they extend plays, because Alabama is so programmed to do specific things on defense. It's like they're robots. They're really talented athletic robots, but they're robots. And if somebody goes off script like Johnny Manziel or Nick Marshall for Auburn or anybody like that, it can hurt them. And Watson has a great deep ball. He's explosive as a runner. He's rushed for 100 yards in five of the last six games. And, you know, the receivers can make plays after the catch. Wayne Gallman, the running back, is a powerful guy who can kind of wear defenses down. So you're not going to wear Alabama down, but they could hit a couple big plays and maybe spread Alabama out like nobody else has this year.
Yeah, it's not like Clemson beat Oklahoma by pace and they knocked them around.
They beat them at the line of scrimmage.
They did. And I think that's gotten a loss a little bit because we're so desperate for Alabama. Whenever Alabama loses, we're like, well, there's another pace team. There's another crazy quarterback. But, you know, Clemson is not like this lightweight team. That was to me the biggest surprise and the most impressive thing about the win against Oklahoma was they just knocked them around from the beginning. Like, there was a time where Oklahoma was catching a couple of breaks and staying in that game, but it still felt like Clemson was the better team.
Yeah, they struggled in the red zone and missed opportunities. They could have been worse. I mean, they were down by one and a half, but they played better the whole game and they kind of took over. And what's amazing about that is, look, Clemson has five new starters in the offensive line. They have a true freshman left tackle protecting the blind side of a Heisman candidate. They had the number one defense in the country last year, and they lost everybody up front. Vic Beasley, Grady Jarrett, Stephon Anthony. These are like coveted NFL prospects. And yet they still have a top 10 defense. Their offensive line has gotten better. They're better than they were last year. And so this is just a physical, deep team. And their coaches last week talked about how, you know, the first few years under Dabo Swinney, they had skill position players. They had, you know, Sammy Watkins, Martavis Bryant, Jacoby Ford. They've been good at those positions, but they did not have the depth. They did not have the line play that really created a foundation for a team that could go 14-0. They're not going to dominate the line of scrimmage against Alabama because nobody does. No. At least their offense won't do it to Alabama's defense. But their defensive line is better than Alabama's offensive line, I think, especially if Shaq Lawson, their star, end plays. He's supposed to. He sprained his knee against Oklahoma. But this is a tough challenge for Alabama because Clemson can make a lot of plays in the backfield, and they have one of the five best defensive backfields in the country.
Yeah, and one of the things that I like about Clemson, I feel like we're talking ourselves into Clemson a little bit. We need to remind ourselves. We'll get to that point in a moment. We'll wild for predictions. But I do think that they're not, like, it seems like they can do a little bit of everything. Like, they're not, yeah. Like, they've got a little bit of Baylor, and they've got a little bit of Georgia.
They're adaptable.
Yeah, and I think that is something that's gotten lost. And I think maybe we haven't noticed as much because, I mean, it was not a strong year for the ACC. The Notre Dame game was played in the monsoon, you know, and it's been all that craziness. And I feel like people didn't really appreciate just how Clemson was until that Oklahoma game.
Agreed, and it wasn't until the second half of the season that they really got confident. Their coaches talked about how Deshaun Watson, you know, he tore his ACL last year. As a freshman, he played, I think, seven games. He had one injury, then he came back, tore his ACL, played through it against South Carolina, missed the bowl game. And it's their offensive coordinator, Chad Morris, left for the SMU job. So they had a new play caller, new quarterback coach, new offensive line, injury at receiver. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts for Clemson. Yeah. And the way it came together in the second half of the year, they didn't totally want to put too much pressure on Watson early in the year because he was still coming back from the knee injury that he recovered from pretty quickly. And so they opened it up with the running game, and he's kind of taken over. And it's just really impressive the way they've kind of adapted. And, you know, I think Alabama has the most dominant part of this game. Their defensive front is the most dominant defensive front we've seen in a long time. Clemson's probably the more complete team and can beat you in a more variety of ways. Whether that can overtake how good Alabama's defensive front is, that's the question.
Isn't the other question, too, thinking of the Alabama-Michigan State game, if Jake Coker plays like that, it feels like they can beat anyone. Like, you know, that's been the thing with Alabama. Like, you make Coker beat you if you have to. In that Michigan State game, he beat them badly. If he plays like that, is there a way for Clemson to win this game?
Yeah, that was the weird thing. You know, they beat Michigan State 38-0, and Derrick Henry had 20 carries for 75 yards after getting 90 carries the previous two games combined. But, you know, Coker had been up and down all year, but he goes 25 of 30 in that game, his most efficient performance. Yeah. Calvin Ridley, the freshman receiver, has become a superstar already. You know, looks to be the next in line. Julio Jones, Amari Cooper. Now they have Calvin Ridley. So, yeah, if he plays like that, Clemson's not going to win. But I don't think he's going to play like that. Michigan State, over the last few years, had a reputation for a great defense, for a great secondary. But it wasn't that this year. Yeah. That's why the Ohio State game was so baffling against Michigan State. Not because Ezekiel Elliott didn't get the ball. It's because they didn't throw downfield against a vulnerable secondary.
That game
secondary.
Was just weird.
It was a very weird game.
Yeah, and it feels like Ohio State would have given them, I don't know if that's how the pairings would have come out, but I feel like Ohio State's not losing 38-0 to Alabama.
So Alabama wisely said, Michigan State is a great defensive line. They're aggressive. They're going to attack Derrick Henry. Let's throw the ball downfield. Let's throw the ball to the perimeter. You can't do that against Clemson. Yeah. Mackenzie Alexander takes top receivers out of the game. Their whole secondary is very, very good. They're one of the best pass defenses in the country, and they're one of the best pass rushes in the country, especially if Shaq Lawson is healthy and plays. But even without Lawson against Oklahoma, they played well. Kevin Dodd, their other starting defensive end, had 3.5 tackles for loss. It's a deep team, a surprisingly deep Clemson team, and I think they'll be able to get some pressure on Coker. Alabama, their offensive line is good. They're good in the run game, but they've given up negative plays, and Alabama is not good on third down, which is kind of surprising with a player like Henry. So if you can get negative plays and get them off schedule, then you put Coker into tough situations, and Alabama's been pretty conservative when they get in those situations, and therefore they have not actually been that successful on third down. So I think Clemson is the type of team that presents a matchup problem for Coker and how Alabama plays.
Well, you're really talking me into Clemson, man. I'm kind of excited. One thing I'm writing about for Monday is you know, this will come as a surprise to you, but I'm going to relate it to something, to one of the teams that I cheer for. But I always think of, you know, Clemson has been a really good team for a long time, but this is a breakthrough. Like, this is a breakthrough. And to me, this is what, you know, I always say Illinois basketball in 2005. They were always very good, and then they had one year where it all came together. Right. And they made it to the national championship game. They almost went undefeated, made it to the national championship game, and played North Carolina, who's basically the Alabama of college basketball. And Illinois missed that chance. They lost. It was a very frustrating game. They have not been back since then. They have not been close to being back since then, even though they've generally been okay at times. Clemson, to me, is not, you know, it's funny, I think the ESPN Insider did those rankings of recruiting and how easy it was, and like, and I think Georgia was number one, but like, there are certain schools, Clemson is, you know, there's recruiting there, and Sweeney is a, Debra Sweeney's a great coach, but it also feels like this is a year where everything has come together. Alabama is going to be back here, if not next year or the year after. Alabama is not going anywhere. I don't think Kirby Smart leaving is going to make everything collapse over there. For me, this feels like a reason to cheer for Clemson, is the idea that, like, this could feel like they're, if they lose, it's going to be hard for them to get back. Because Florida State had a down year. North Carolina was probably the second best team in that conference, and we saw was fine, but maybe not like that level. Not everything's going to fall for them at this exact run. Is there a sense of that? Do you think I'm right in that theory? That, or is Clemson elevated to that top level now?
I think there's something to that. It's harder for a team like Clemson to sustain success. I mean, they're near good recruiting territory, but it's harder to get people to go to Clemson. I mean, they've recruited Florida pretty well. They can recruit Atlanta, but everybody recruits Atlanta. Alabama owns Atlanta. They will have Deshaun Watson back next year, and that's a big thing. They'll have Wayne Gallman back next year at running back. They'll have a lot of they'll have key players in the offensive line back, but they're going to lose a lot early to the draft still. And while they have recruited really well, they've recruited basically at a top 15 level over the consistently. They're consistently good, but they're top 15. Alabama has signed 5 straight number one classes in 24/7 Sports. That's ridiculous, and that's how they reload. Only Alabama and Ohio State really can like reload consistently. So, you know, I think Clemson is a program that can sustain success. It has money. It has a big fan base. It has a big stadium. All of that. It looks like a big time program, and after so many years where they just could not break through, ever since Florida State joined the ACC, they went almost 20 years without an ACC title, and now they've won a few. They've gotten the Orange Bowl several times, and you know, I think Sweeney is a great delegator. He's never been a coordinator, but he's a great recruiter. He's a great CEO. He's a great face of the program who really he plays well in South Carolina. And
he would never go to a bigger. Do you think this is his job?
There's one other job that he would go to, and it's the team that he's playing. I'm not saying he's going to be Nick Saban's replacement.
Of course.
But he is somebody they will call.
He went to school there, right.
He was a walk-on receiver in the late '80s and early '90s, and was a receiver for their 1992 national championship. So if there's any school that Dabo would jump to, it's Alabama. Right. And if Nick Saban leaves in the next few years, that's who they should call. And it's easier to sustain success at Alabama for sure. I think Clemson will be all right. You know, Florida State's it's going to be the better program over time.
And Miami should be coming back.
Miami's going to get better, I think, too. Louisville's even getting better. They're going to be strong next year. So it's a challenge for sure. But I think Clemson, you know, they're probably going to be a top five team next year, preseason, with Watson coming back at least. Beyond that, you know, they recruited Deshaun Watson from early in his high school career. That was the guy. It's like, he's going to be our guy. We're going to build around him.
Athens has brought up that he's from Gainesville, Georgia a lot. That comes up a lot in the city of Athens.
So they have these 2 years with him, but it's going to be hard to reload when he's gone, and their defense will go through 2 straight years where they lost a ton.
All right, so when you look at there's a million ways this game can go, of course, but to me, the thing that you want, does Clemson need to score? Do they need to get ahead early? Like, is it more pressing for them to get on the board early than Alabama? Like, if this is 3-0 at halftime, I'm going to think that Alabama's going to stomp them in the second half. Does Clemson? And I may be wrong, but I think that's going to if this game is a low scoring, I think because we saw in the Michigan State game, you know, Alabama doing that again. Does Clemson need to strike first, or can they kind of play Alabama's game a little bit?
I think they need to strike first. We've seen before, you cannot play Alabama's game against Alabama. Yeah. It just does not go well. Yeah. Clemson's, you know, they operate differently. They spread the field. But Georgia tries to play Alabama's game, humiliation.
For that first quarter of that Georgia game, you're like, okay, punch back and forth. Right. They're doing, they're right, and all of a sudden, one, two things turn, and it's just over.
LSU game, too. Yeah. I mean, and then Leonard Fournette rushes for 32 yards or whatever he has. You know, I think Clemson is going to need to hit a few big plays. It's harder without Deion Kane, who really emerged as a deep threat. You know, the receiving core is still solid. Artavis Scott can make plays after the catch, but they're going to need to push the ball downfield. Sean Watson throws a great deep ball, but, you know, they will dink and dunk a little bit more than, you know, with Watson's running ability and all that. So they're going to need to push it downfield, though, because you want Alabama – obviously you want to lead, but Alabama playing from behind is much different than Alabama, you know, in a tie game or ahead by seven when Derrick Henry just starts mashing you with 40 carries in a row and takes over the game. You know, if they're playing from behind, that's going to be an opportunity for the Clemson defense to come after Coker, to force some mistakes. He played a great game against Michigan State, but – I think Brent Venables is one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. They've shown they can come up with great game plans. I think Coker will have trouble if they're playing from behind. This is the type of game where, you know, they might have gotten away from it against Michigan State, but this is the type of game where I think Nick Saban would want it to follow that script where the defense sucks the life out of you. And then they put the ball in Derrick Henry's hands in the second half, and he just runs 5 yards at a time and wears you down and makes you hate yourself.
There is a way that people discuss Alabama winning this game that almost sounds defeated. There is all like this Alabama team feels like the rest of the Alabama teams. Like, I don't think anyone's going to look back and be like, wow, that 2000, like that defensive front, the life of the defensive front. But no one's going to look back and be like, wow, just, we'll never forget that 2015 Alabama team. It feels like if something special is going to happen out of the season, it's going to come from Watson and Clemson.
Yeah, it doesn't. There's no way to distinguish this from the other championship Alabama teams. It's a Nick Saban team. It's a machine. Right. They're like nine deep on the defensive line with five-star talent. Yeah. They're great, but they're a little boring.
Yeah.
We know they're a little bit boring, and we've seen this before. And Clemson is different, and it's fun to watch Alabama lose to get knocked back a little bit. The Ole Miss game, they lost. They gave up over 40 points, but it was kind of a fluke game.
Yeah.
I mean, Alabama turned it over five times in that game. Ole Miss had one of the most ridiculous fluke touchdowns you'll ever see, which they won by six. And they had five turnovers. They had this long touchdown. Nine times out of ten, Alabama probably wins that game.
Yeah.
And so now I'm making the case for Alabama for sure because nobody's really touched them.
Yeah.
But you want to see something different. And I think Clemson is the type of team that can perhaps create some turnovers. And if they do, they can take advantage because Deshaun Watson is really, really good.
I think people want Alabama to not be this so desperately. Like, remember when they lost to Mississippi this year, Dan Wolkin, who I like. I don't know if it's Dan Wolkin, but I think he wrote the piece of, this is the end of the Alabama thing.
He's not the only one. A lot of people write that. Every time it happens.
Every time they lose.
It's September and you're like, oh, wait, Alabama's still really good and everybody else is losing. And they still have Derrick Henry and they still have the most ridiculously talented defense.
I mean, Georgia was favored in that Alabama game.
I think I picked Georgia,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah. So, but to me, once you saw, like, oh, wait, nope, they're still Alabama, and they haven't stopped since. And they haven't stopped doing that since.
Oh, when they don't turn the ball over five times and give up a fluke 70-yard touchdown, they're actually fine. And, you know, look, this Alabama offense is not great. You know, if you look at a lot of their stats, they're kind of mediocre. Yeah. I mean, advanced stats probably have them in, like, the 20s overall in offense, which... good,
fine,
but it's not great.
But
Derrick Henry's a great player, but, you know, Alabama has not necessarily always been efficient. Again, as I said earlier, they're not great on third down. Coker had a great game, but he's been up and down this year. So, you know, that's why I said I think Clemson is kind of a more complete team. It's just that Alabama's, you know, A'shaun Robinson, Jonathan Allen, Jerron Reed, Reggie Ragland, you know, Tim Williams, who's has 19 tackles this year as a pass rush specialist. Of those 19, 10 and a half are sacks, and he might go to the NFL early with 19 tackles as a linebacker. I mean, it's unfair what they have. I mean, Alabama's had these great defenses before, but more than previous years, they're great at creating negative plays, at rushing the passer. They usually don't have great individual stats. They do this year. They're terrifying the way they can not only just stuff the run, but knock you off schedule and make you face 3rd and 15. And when that happens, you don't have a chance.
All right, well, I feel like we should probably make a pick then. I'd like to know one thing, by the way. One of the many things I love about Matt Brown, we have literally been sitting here talking. You just read off the tackle stats, for one of the players. He's not, there are no papers in front of Matt right
I've
now.
I've written a lot of words about this game over the last week.
I'm gathering. Yeah, I know. Fine, I'm just hitting your talking points.
But I appreciate it.
No, fine, I'm just kidding. But so looking at this game, now that I've got you here, we've talked some of the different ways you can go about. How do you think it's going about? How's this going to land? Where are you leaning?
I don't feel good about this at all, what I'm going to say, because I very much could see Alabama winning 24-7 and Clemson feeling horrible about it. Maybe it's just me trying to be an optimist about this game and saying, I want it to be fun, and these games were terrible in the years.
Right.
And
you're doing a different...
Alabama's, yeah. It's boring for Alabama to win every... It's impressive, but it's kind of boring.
This is your version of losing to Mississippi. Oh, Alabama's over! This is the thing that we all want to happen so desperately.
I don't think Alabama's going to be over, because they're going to be recruiting.
I know that's not what you're saying. But
I think they can lose. They lost to Ohio State last year to a team that got hot, and they lost to Ole Miss in September, and they've lost games. I picked Clemson 24-23. I have a full breakdown on sportsonearth.com.
Is that what it's called? Sportsonearth.com. Yes. Okay.
You should go there and read all of that fine stuff.
Yeah, should. Some people already are.
So I picked Clemson 24-23 based on the fact that I love Clemson's secondary. I think Mackenzie Alexander is capable of kind of shutting down Calvin Ridley. I think he's been kind of an underrated player that people finally... He's a guy who... is going to be a first-round pick who has never had an interception in his career, which is kind of a crazy thing for a cornerback. It's because nobody ever throws at him, ever. He just doesn't have any stats because he doesn't see the ball. So I think Clemson has players like that. If Shaq Lawson plays, you know, their linebackers have stepped up. They're a complete defense, and Alabama has the better defense, but Clemson is a top-10 unit, and they played really well against Oklahoma. They've had some good games. They mostly shut down Florida State. You know, they shut down Notre Dame for three quarters. This is a complete team that's really, really good. And, you know, if they can create some negative plays and put pressure on Jake Coker, and if Deshaun Watson can make a couple big plays and extend plays with his legs and spread the field a little bit, this is a lot of ifs.
Right.
And Clemson's going to have to play like a perfect game to win. But I think they are capable of doing it. And I don't feel confident, but I'm picking Clemson 24-23.
Well, I think Clemson is the team that is perfectly designed to beat Alabama, is versatile and well placed, and has the quarterback that can do it, and is going to lose 31-10. Sorry, I've watched.
Reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that Georgia Alabama game changed my life, man. I just like I understand. So I feel like I understand the world of college football in a sadder, more depressing way than I did before after that game.
I might have more confidence in your pick than mine. That's the thing with Alabama. I mean, they are terrifying. They have they're just all 300 pounds and fast, and were 5-star recruits, and they're all experienced somehow too. I mean, Alabama. When you watch the NFL draft over the next 2 years, the number of Alabama defenders, it's going to be like the 2011 team that played LSU when basically every player in that game is in the NFL now.
Yeah.
That's what this defense at least is going to be like. And that's what they do. And maybe I'm just, you know, not trying to be defeatist and I wasn't a Georgia fan. But
you're an optimist. I get it. The last thing I want to talk to you before we sign off, we have not talked about the Georgia Penn State TaxSlayer.com Bowl. That was very exciting.
It was a great game, wasn't it?
That was. Hey,
it was actually close.
It was close. It was. But yeah, that was definitely a game where I want to ask you about Penn State very briefly, because I know they've gone through more turmoil, I think, under Franklin than I think that they thought they were going to.
And they just lost their defensive coordinator yesterday.
How do they feel about Franklin there?
I think everybody's a little bit wary. I mean,
it's been
a lot of change for Penn State.
Yeah.
Obviously, the scandal was horrible, and everybody was used to Joe Paterno for so long, and staff continuity. They had the same assistant coaches for so long. And then you change, and it's this horrible scandal, and Bill O'Brien comes in and saves the program. Yeah. Everybody thought, oh my God, these are the worst penalties ever. O'Brien kept it together, and they still fielded the team, and they have not finished under 500. Right. And if you said that when the sanctions happened...
Of course.
Everybody like, how is that possible? How would they never go under 500?
Yeah, it really is.
So
it's kind of crazy.
And then, you know, O'Brien leaves, and they change to Franklin. O'Brien was this kind of straight shooter who... You believed everything he said, and, you know, you respected the guy. Franklin, he puts on an act. He's a very positive... Yeah. Overwhelmingly positive guy who wants everybody. He's kind of a control freak too, and I think there's just, you know, there's been a lot of change, and you have another different personality, and he does things different, and there was all, you know, people are excited because
also they're not winning a lot.
He's having recruiting success, but now with the not winning thing.
And the also, that offense, is a mess.
Yes. Man. The sanctions were lifted, and people were like, oh, the sanctions are over.
Ta-da!
That's not true.
Right.
The offensive line is still a disaster, and that wasn't Franklin's fault that he inherited that. Now, there's questions about why did they not improve from last year to this year. But, you know, there were significant hurdles to climb over. With that said, yeah, the offense was a disaster. Christian Hackenberg was just totally wasted over the last 2 years. I think, you know, there was a lot made over Hackenberg when he announced that he was going to the draft that he did not mention James Franklin.
Yeah.
That I don't think that was unintentional. There's not, I don't think there's a warm and fuzzy relationship. And
also, that was the most obvious. He's not coming back in this game after he was injured, and that bowl game was like,
he's sacked over 100 times in his career in the last 2 years.
He's like, enough. I shouldn't even be playing this game in the first place. So
I think Franklin hired a good offense coordinator. They made a change. They hired Joe Moorhead, who was the Fordham head coach, who had last year had 3 1,000-yard receivers and an 1,800-yard rusher.
John Skelton was his
Penn State has had – no, this is the FCS. It's in the Patriot League.
Yeah.
But
no, I'm saying John Skelton was the Fordham's quarterback.
Yeah, right. But I'm saying with their 3,000-yard receivers, Penn State has had like 3,000-yard receivers in its history.
right.
So, you know, hey, it's a good hire, but they just lost Bob Shoup, their defensive coordinator, to Tennessee, which for like – it was a lateral move, and that raises questions. Why are they losing a guy to a lateral move for barely – not even a big raise? So – anyway, this is a long way of saying, yes, people are a little bit...
people are concerned.
...anxious and antsy because they've been 7-6 years in a row and they lose a lot next year.
Yeah.
And you're in a division with Harbaugh and Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
It's not exactly... And Mark D'Antonio. It's not exactly easy. So, I don't know. I think the relationship is souring a little bit and people are going to start to get impatient if things don't go well next year.
Well, then I'll look forward to Bill Cuba being hired as the next coach of Penn State because he's also – Illinois is also –
Okay, how long will Bill Cuba stay?
It'll be a year. I don't think there's any way I think he's gone.
Because they'll have a new AD.
Yeah, there'll be a new AD.
Two-year deal?
It's a two-year deal, which is –
I mean, it's ridiculous. He's an interim coach.
And it really is – obviously, that's terrible for recruiting. But I really – the interim athletic director gave this already infamous quote of saying when he hired Cuba for 2 years, he said, well, it's not ideal, but it's not a dagger to the heart of our program. Like, woohoo, put that on
there. Already hard to recruit there.
So it's definitely a problem. But also, like, frankly, there's just Illinois' problems go beyond football right now. Like, they have nobody in charge. Like, they have an interim school president. Like, everything is a disaster at Illinois right now. So the most stable thing they have going on in their entire university is the basketball coach who is about to go 0-4 in the Big Ten and is 8-10 and is completely – the whole program is completely falling apart.
Mike Dudek will be back next year.
He cut his hair. It's so disappointing. He cut his hair. But Mikey Dudek will be back. And listen, you know, the problem is –
they're in the Big Ten West.
They are. But it's funny because they actually cross over. Michigan is a team they play in the East next year. So, yeah. So, like, you know, their schedule – they have North Carolina – they have so like it's looking rough. He's gonna need to win like 8 games to help land that job, and he's not winning.
It was a weird thing where this year where people were like, oh, he's done such a great job. It's like, oh, he did fine, but they went 5-7.
Yeah, it's weird because
they lost 39-0 to Penn State.
Yeah, and their offense was terrible this year. Like, which is the one thing he was supposed to be good at, and B, you have a quarterback. Like, Westlund is a good quarterback, and you actually have, and the fact that the offense was a mess, like, I don't. He's gone after this year. Part of the thing is he's really likable. Yeah. Beckman was notoriously terrible in front of cameras and just gives you a giggle. That's my favorite.
I was at Big Ten Media Day this year and it was a bizarre thing. Him trying to dodge all the questions and then getting fired a month later.
Yeah, he was a disastrous hire. Mike Thomas was a disastrous AD hire. They're just they just need someone to come in. Even now, they've said they've already pushed back the date they're going to hire the AD by. It's just a mess at Illinois now.
So we went to two schools that have had not the...
not the best, yes. not the best and yeah, and have been loud, difficult, not that good on the field, and had scandal off the field.
And Georgia just fired a coach whose team went 10-3 this year.
10-3, and the seniors won 40 games. Seniors won 40 games, and but hey, Kerbs is, I think I've mentioned this to you before, Kirby Smart is a college friend of my wife. She's a college friend. He used to date a woman that was in our wedding party. Huh. So and so now he's moving to Athens, apparently. Back channel. So I remember when I started dating my wife, I'd never even been to the South. I think I'd been there for like a hockey tournament in like college. And
to the South for a hockey tournament.
Of course, exactly. Not many people consider. It was before they even hosted the Olympics. And so I never really paid attention. And my wife, she was kind of like sports. She's from the South, so she would watch football, but generally otherwise didn't have a lot of sports thoughts. But she's like, hey, so you write about sports, because I was still doing Deadspin when we started dating. She's like, yeah, you know, I've a guy I went to college with, a good friend of mine, I think he's like a defensive coach at like, I think maybe Alabama. And I was like, oh, I'll have to look up. She's like, yeah, he seems to be doing well. He seems happy. Last time I talked to him, he seems happy. He got married. He's going to have a kid. But yeah, I don't know if he's just like a graduate assistant or if he's going to, and it turned out to be Kirby Smart.
That's pretty good.
Turned out to be Curbs. So I'm about to, from what I'm told, he's more of a, I mean, you know, he seems like a very nice man. Everyone likes him. But, you know, I mean, come on. When's the last football player that you hung out with being like, hey, off the field, we'd be friends. Like, you know, generally speaking.
And Nick Saban assistant.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm sure. Though I was actually impressed for those guys who never get any media training at all. He's pretty good. Like, because Saban never lets the assistants actually ever talk to those guys.
Yeah, it's really weird because, like, at media day yesterday, everybody's available. And it's like, people are like, wait, trying to figure out which one is which because they're never available.
I know.
But even, like, Kiffin, he's, like, hidden in a closet, basically, because Saban doesn't want to talk. But he's actually pretty good with the media. He was, like, great yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, it's really...
So it's funny when they get out there. Like, I had good conversations with their assistants, and it's like, they're probably happy to be let out.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, let outside for once.
Curbs. Yes, but Curbs is back in Georgia. Their first game is against North Carolina at the Georgia Dome next year, which seems like it'll be kind of a fun game. But all right, well, thank you. We'll do it up. Everyone enjoy the game. This will be up. You should have plenty of time to listen to this before the game because it starts at 8:30, 6:30 Arizona time, 8:30, so on. All right, well, enjoy the game, everyone. And I'm sure maybe we'll do a little another podcast come recruiting time, come all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I'm weird about recruiting too, but we'll figure it out. All right, Matt, thank you for coming on, and we'll do it again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Yep.